Klein.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
And of course, we are talking to Kinelwe Sibola, and Kinelwe is our shapeshifter for today. I could go on and on and on and introduce her. Of course, she does quite a lot of things. She is a scientist, amongst other things, and several other careers that she holds. But for today, we're talking to her as a radio news editor, of course, from the South African Broadcasting Corporation, that is the SABC, in fact, and she's joining us on the line. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening.
How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
Well, thank you so much for asking. How was your day?
It's still going on.
It's still going on? Oh, my goodness.
I'm currently on a shift. My shifts are usually 10-hour shifts, so I start at 1 o'clock. And I finish at 11 o'clock at night.
How is that even possible? 10 hours?
It's 10 solid hours.
Yo.
So for me to cover time to engage you, it really takes forward planning.
Yeah. I'm sure it takes about weeks and weeks of planning. So what time are you knocking off today, this evening?
At 11 p.m.
At 11 p.m. Sure. You know what? We're not going to keep you more than we should. But thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really, really appreciate your time. And this is a slot that we use to talk to shapeshifters like yourselves, people who are leading in their own industries. I'm sure there are young people that follow you, you know, never had the opportunity to maybe even talk to you, get a sense of your story, how you made it to be where you are, and some of those things. And that's why this particular segment is quite an interesting one for us. So really, really appreciate your time. And we don't take it for granted. And like you said, you're knocking off at 11 p.m. this evening is something else. Can we go back? I mean, I really, really would like to go through all of your careers, you know. But today we're talking about the one that has to do specifically with radio. But I want to know the other ones briefly. The other ones, you know, there's always nice meat in the other stuff right there. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so basically now I am a freelance editor for the SABC.
Yeah.
But by training, I am a scientist. I'm currently writing up my PhD.
Ooh.
So sure. I do have a lot on my plate generally.
Yeah, no,
but because
you do.
I've been in radio for so long, I can summarize.
Yeah.
So how I got into radio was that I got into campus radio.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and then one day when we had Prime Media Broadcasting at Fitz University for the day, they were going to showcase the careers that they have.
Yeah.
I was actually in between an experiment in my honors year.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine was in the queue to interview for 702.
Yeah.
And at that age, I wasn't even interested in 702.
Yes.
So then she was like, "No, friend, you have 4 hours. Come stand with me."
Yeah.
And she allowed me to go and interview just before her.
Yeah.
And I got into radio and she became a chef.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
So okay. She basically drew me into my destiny.
Mm.
And I had never thought about radio outside that campus radio.
Yeah.
Even the campus radio thing was a friend of mine who didn't want to audition by himself.
Yeah.
And he said, "You know what, let's do this duo thing and then you come through and you audition with me because I can't do it on my own."
Yes.
And then we practiced and then we went ahead and we went to audition.
Yeah.
He's a medical doctor.
Yeah.
I'm still in media.
And you're still in media.
So that destiny is a weird thing where the people around you can actually drive you to where you need to be and where you'll prosper the most.
Definitely. It sounds like this industry went looking for you.
Yeah, it did. Definitely went looking for me and it found me.
Yeah.
And even when I tried to leave.
Yeah.
It's found me again.
Look at that. You're not going anywhere, by the way. Let me just say, for the record, you can try all the other things, but you're not going anywhere. So how does this now intertwine with your scientist and PhD?
Not at all.
Not at
They're
all.
Like chalk and cheese.
Sure.
So my project for my PhD was that if you know Hartbeespoort Dam,
yes,
there's a plant that was growing on top of Hartbeespoort Dam.
Okay.
And I did a program where you would release insects that would eat the plant.
Yeah.
And at first it was just like, you might be playing, you know.
Yeah.
And I think after 2 years, we had our first sign of success in 2020, in January 2020. And then people were like, actually, the science works.
Yeah.
And for the past 3 years, it's been quite successful.
Yeah.
And it's continuing, even though my part of the field work is done.
Mm.
And the institution that I go to school with, Rhodes University, that institute of the Center of Biocontrol, is still working on Hartbees. And I saw an article 2 days ago, actually, that said, oh, the dam is still clear. It's only covered 6%. So it means that proof of concept is done.
Yeah.
And I think it's a successful PhD.
Yeah.
Even though writing it up is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's met a lot of challenges on the way.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, I wanted to have finished about a year ago.
Yeah.
But this is more, I'll share more about the challenges that I've faced in the past 3 years that have led to just a bit of a delay.
Yeah, I want to get into that in just a moment from now. And also the fact that they say people who do their PhDs is because they are lonely. You know, why would you even start such a beast that's just sitting there and all of a sudden you like go and rattle the beast in its nest? It doesn't make sense and all. But we'll talk about that just now. Let's go back a bit. Where were you born?
I was born in Garankuwa.
Garankuwa.
Yes, I'm a girl from Pretoria.
Okay. Okay.
In a hospital that my mom worked in, Garankuwa Hospital at the time.
Look at that. Hey, yeah, I know.
and the doctor that delivered me, Dr. Khomari.
Yeah.
Actually,
wait, you still even remember the doctor?
Friends, yes, because when I was in grade 10,
yeah,
I was singing a duet with a girl at school.
Yeah.
And when we needed to practice, and I was going to her house, my mother said, no, let me call the family first and let me hear the kind of people that they are.
Mm.
And she found her friend, the doctor that delivered me.
Your things are always aligning. Like there's always this thing, this thread, common thread everywhere.
There is a common thread. And I see it now that I'm talking to you.
Karanga, as they call it, it's Karanga, right?
Yes, Kikaranga.
Kikaranga. Yeah, I got that right. You know what, Pitori have got their own language and stuff like that. Like,
we do.
But Karanga, Pitori and all this stuff. It's always a weird thing when I'm in Pretoria because I always have to mind my twang and my everything. I'm like, I'm in Karanga now. You know,
no,
so.
We don't mind the twangs.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Remember, we grew up in Buputatswana.
Yes.
We spoke a lot of English back then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we don't mind the twang.
Okay, that's good.
So don't downplay it.
Ah, that's good. That's good. What are some of the challenges that you faced growing up in Garankuwa? And maybe just to paint a picture for our listeners as well, what type of socioeconomic challenges were around you?
Well, I'll say I was a bit fortunate because my mom was a nurse.
Yeah.
My dad worked at the BMW factory.
Yeah.
So I had parents that both worked. You know, and unlike most of my peers at the time, I wasn't being raised by a grandparent.
Yeah.
I grew up in a house where there was a mom and dad and they worked particular hours. My mom worked a lot more than my dad.
Yeah.
Because with a factory worker, he was home by 3 every day.
Sure.
And then mom would be working until 7 o'clock.
Sure.
But I think the challenges for growing up in Garankuwa was the dreams.
Mm.
I was always a wanderer.
Mm.
I was always that girl that would walk alone and get into trouble because I would explore the water pipes.
Yes.
So because I was scared of crossing the road and a friend of mine had gotten hit by a taxi, I then decided I'm going to find a way to get home and not get hurt.
Yeah.
So I would walk in the water pipes.
Sure.
So I would, until my dad found me one day.
Sure.
And I got a hiding of my life.
I'm sure you still even
so
remember it.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Because So I would literally get myself from one zone to another zone without actually crossing the road.
Because
I would walk in the pipelines and I knew where to go.
Mm.
I didn't even think about the danger.
Yeah.
You know, as a child, you don't think about the
danger. You don't, true.
You just think, yeah, you get to explore it and know, oh, no, if I want to go from zone one to zone four, this is how I go. And I turn here and not there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like a strange navigation where you don't even have like Waze. Google Maps.
But
you know, when I get at this point, I must turn left. Then I go home. If I turn right, I'm going to another zone.
Yeah.
But the challenges is dreaming and finding people that actually believe that you can be. I think I wanted to be a biomedical engineer.
Mm.
It was a thing I read somewhere, and I liked reading.
Mm.
So there was a thing that I read about a biomedical engineer. And I kept saying, this is what I want to be.
Mm.
But nobody knew what this
thing
I wanted to be was.
Yeah.
And I remember even the distinction for me to go to WITS was, I loved Formula One.
Mm, okay.
And the head engineer for Ferrari was a guy that went to WITS.
Mm.
And I thought, that's the institution for me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're a child, you dream big.
Yeah, so, definitely.
You know, if that guy can make it to Ferrari, surely if I go to WITS, I can make it
somewhere. Yeah.
You know? But like any child that grows up in apartheid South Africa, even when you're 5 or 6 or 8, and you have conscious parents, you had that thing of, can you really achieve much?
Mm.
You know? Mm. You're seeing the societal issues.
Mm.
We do know that, you know, apartheid didn't just end on the street when they called your father a boy.
Yeah.
When it gets into the household, it has ripple effects of a man that's already emasculated. And here he is married to a very forward-thinking young woman who is a nurse and wants to go into forensic nursing. And my mom, like, the earliest memories of my mom was she was always studying. You know, she had I remember when she had my fourth sister, she would put my sister on the table on a continental pillow and study.
Oh, sure.
You know, so there were books and my sister on her table.
Yeah.
And she was always studying. So I had that image of someone that dreams bigger than where they come from. And my mom was a rural girl.
Mm.
She comes from a place called Sehoko in Mpumalanga.
Mm.
And she had pulled herself out from, she worked at a cotton farm at the age of 16.
Mm.
And then somehow she found her way to Para and became a nurse because that was her dream.
Yes.
So I was always driven by education, and she kept saying, my father would not let us get married until we had a profession.
Yes. Yeah.
And that became a big thing for our family.
Mm.
Even when my parents got divorced and there wasn't enough money, I watched my mother say, you are going to go to the university you want to go to because I want you to get educated.
Mm.
I want you to have a world that's bigger than mine.
Mm. Sure. That's really beautiful. That's really beautiful. And I think it shows in who you then became. And I suppose as some people say, we grow every day. You are becoming on a everyday basis because, of course, those type of, you know, backgrounds you come from do shape who we are. Take us through then university, your first day at university, and then what happened after that?
My first year in university was surreal.
Yeah.
In the first 3 months, I had friends that were in the arts. Because I love dancing, I love singing.
Yeah.
And then we wrote tests,
yeah.
and then I got back like the 50%,
which was not acceptable. Yeah.
Shock of my life, and my life literally. I did a 360 and a 180, and I just changed my life.
Yeah.
And I would be staying up and like reading at night, just to catch up.
Yes.
Because for me, it was unacceptable.
Sure.
Because how would I get into honors when they tell you? You walk into WITS and they say, look to your left, look to your right.
Mm.
Only one of you is going to make it to honors. So you guys decide which one.
Yeah.
And my thing was, I am going to be that one that gets into honors.
Mm.
So then that shifted how I viewed my academics, and that I'm responsible for myself. There isn't a parent that's going to say, wake up, go to class. You have to do it yourself. And I think that was an exciting time for me because I was always bored in high school. Because I grew up in, so we subsequently moved from Harankua to the Orchards. And when you move to a place where you are an outlier. There aren't the three other black children that are here are on the other side of town. If you want to see them, you're always alone.
Yeah.
So in that environment, you don't make friends because you are like-minded.
Yes.
You make friends because you look alike.
Yeah.
You know, sure. And I was bored throughout high school. I really did find the children in high school quite boring.
Yeah. Sure.
And then here I was in first year and I had like-minded people.
Yeah.
And I had a spectrum of friends, which I still do now.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, I had a Muslim guy that was in my chemistry class that became a close friend.
Yeah.
You know, and the variation kind of opened up for me. But we could still discuss our belief systems and still, you know, respect and honor each other in that space.
Yeah.
Right. But these were people who were eager to learn, who wanted to know more, who also had ambitions and dreams.
Yeah.
And it was always like, what are you going to do with this degree? You know? And we were like, yeah, we're going to discover stuff. You know, you don't think about it. It's a process to discover all those things. And you are set on being the best at any given time, because you come together with people that have the privilege of a tutor when you don't.
When you don't, hey, I know we don't have much time with you, but looking at your career in the media space, what has been some of the challenges you've faced?
Being a woman in the media space is challenging.
Sure.
And being a woman that likes to, I have never been limited in how I express myself because my mother would say, look at me in my eye.
Yeah.
Do not, you know, do not look sideways when you're talking.
Yes.
Talk to me. Do not use your hands. Look at me and speak.
Yes.
And articulate yourself.
Yeah.
That is challenging because when you come into a space where you've always been safe.
Yeah.
You with expressing yourself.
Yeah.
Then you meet people that are not necessarily like as brave as you are in articulating how you feel and what you will not do, because integrity becomes the fundamental of who you are.
Yeah.
Especially in the radio space, you have to have integrity because there's so many temptations that will make you, you know, twist the truth a little bit or be a bit biased.
Yeah.
But integrity is fundamental, and you're always about, we are here to serve the people that listen to us.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. Okay, let's look at money then. How would you define your relationship with money?
I am a saver.
You're a saver.
I like spending though.
Oh, okay. It seems like a dichotomy though. How do you how do you bring the two together?
So in my I will have investments that are small.
Yes.
And then like lump sums when something, when I'm doing an extra gig somewhere or, you know, then you leave a job and you put the money in a retirement annuity, but you take a little bit and you put in a little bracket where, you know, in case of an emergency, I can access that.
Yeah.
So for me, I save when I'm in crisis, like the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
I was unemployed for 3 months.
Yeah.
I had enough to survive for that 3 months.
Nice. Nice.
So I am a saver, but I also like
spending. Just have the nice things in life, eh? The softer things in life.
Beautiful things.
Oh, look at that. I suppose you love flowers and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I believe you must buy flowers for yourself.
Yes. Ah, okay. That's
as
very
much
true.
As you get them, you must get flowers for yourself. There's a market I go, and I go every Sunday.
Yes.
And I do it, and I get, you know, a bouquet.
Yes.
And I'm happy.
Ah, fantastic.
And it makes me happy.
Fantastic. What advice would you give to your younger self?
About money or about life?
Generally, if there's one thing that when you take, you know, like politicians would say with the benefit of hindsight, you look
with
back and you're like,
hindsight,
what would you say to your younger self?
I would say keep going.
Keep going.
Yeah. Because I think, in hindsight, you think, no, I would have told myself, relax a bit.
Yeah.
No. The reason that I have two careers now is that when I started, I had two careers.
Yes.
You know, there wasn't, if I didn't make the compromises of, instead of when I was in honors, on a weekend, I was working at 702.
Yeah.
So I got to build a career while actually learning and getting educated towards another one. So that I would say keep going, because there's no other way. I wouldn't be here had I not made those sacrifices, had I not made those choices that I made back then.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be here.
Zanele is saying she does actually buy flowers. So someone knows you here that you do actually buy flowers. So that's an amazing one.
I really do love flowers.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. If you were to give advice to young girls, young women that are looking at you, you know, want to be where you are, again, what would you say to them? I think we live in a world where, you know, women are not taken seriously, you know, at the proverbial table, as it were, where they also deserve to be sitting there. Like you said, you also faced issues of being a woman in an industry where women are not taken seriously. How would you, you know, advise them to keep going?
I would say your voice still matters.
Yeah.
But also, I think that particularly in an African setting, we are a matriarchal society.
Yeah.
We need to learn to be a lot softer.
Sure.
Because our mothers, that is not what the world needs now.
Ah,
we need the softness.
Yes.
And we don't have it because we have these matriarchal figures that decided which schools we went to, that run societies, that run households, that, you know, even with the husband there, they still made the majority of the decisions. But now we need fragility. You need to be soft.
Mm.
You need to be able to break down and say, I am going to look like I feel.
Mm.
There's no need for me to look perfect, even when everything around me is falling apart.
Mm, I'm going to look like I feel. I love that. I love that. I have a request, if you may.
Okay.
My request says, she's a good cook and she bakes as well. And I love cakes. I don't know how we're going to deal with this thing.
Did Zanella do that? She spilled the beans, right?
I think she knew that I love cakes, so she did that deliberately. So you can blame her for that. I'm going to put my order for cakes, you know.
Okay.
So apparently you're very good at baking and cakes. So I'm putting my order in.
Okay. Can we do it after the submission?
No, fair enough, fair enough.
Writing up.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I will bring cakes and we'll take pictures to confirm.
Definitely, definitely.
I made a promise and it's been delivered.
You see, the power of being on air, live on air, is that, you know, you can ask for cakes and they're going to come, you see. Thank you so much, Rev. It has been a pleasure. I would have loved for us to have part two, but I know you have to go. And but really appreciate your time this evening.
No, I appreciate being on. Thank you so much.
Have a good one. God bless. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.